Working Cows Podcast, episode 252.
Welcome to the podcast that gives producers a platform to discuss and share paradigm-challenging practices. Practices that have increased the effectiveness of their operation and the joy that their families have received from this lifestyle.
Howdy, everybody. This is Clay Connery, host of the Working Cows Podcast, powered by the Global Ag Network, here with another episode for you guys. And I wanted to do a solo episode today. This is an episode I've been ruminating on for a while, and something that I've been thinking about and wanting to share with you, and thinking about how to phrase it and how to carefully phrase it. And, you know, part of the reason that it's taken me a while to release this episode is because it's hard for me to be combative or to come out and say, this is how you should do X, Y, and Z. And so I'm still not doing that today. I'm presenting some things that have been paradigm shifts for me, some changes in the way I think about certain things, and trying to say, you know, here's a different way of looking at this thing. Here's a different perspective. And ultimately, you know, Paul said in Philippians, for me to live is Christ and to die is gain. That's Philippians 1:21, I think. And ultimately, you know, for me to live is not more acres, is not more production, is not more cows, is not more sheep, is not more podcast listeners. For me to live is Christ, and He's ultimately what's most valuable, what's driving me, what's motivating me, and the one I aim to please. And then, you know, of course, I've shared this before, but the wheel, Jesus is the hub of the wheel, and there are different spokes on that wheel. Whichever one is touching the ground at this moment is the one that I'm paying attention to. So the family spoke is on the ground. I'm with family. The church spoke is on the ground. I'm with the church. When the ranch business spoke is on the ground, I'm with the ranch business spoke. When the podcast spoke is on the ground, I'm with the ranch with the podcast spoke. So you know, those kind of big overarching picture perspectives are more important. And so wherever I land this plane today, I've got a brief sketch of an outline, but not much more than that. And so wherever I land this plane today, those things are always going to remain ultimate. And if you've got a humming business model and everything is clicking along just fine, and you're doing it different than what I say here today, then absolutely carry on and just enjoy ranching and enjoy the business and the lifestyle that it brings and all of those things. So really hope this turns out the way I think it will. And the title of this episode is Red Pills for Ranchers. Now, that's not me waving a MAGA flag or you know, starting a Trump rally. red pills, of course, goes all the way back to the Matrix. Are you going to take the red pill or the blue pill? And then they talk about how a red pill is something that you see it, you can't unsee it. It changes your perspective forever. And so, that is kind of the idea here. And so, I think that the red pills for ranchers, we'll start off with maybe a tame one. And this is one that we've talked about different times on the Working Cows podcast, but start off with a tame one. And that is that just because cattle are the same color, just because a bull and a cow are the same color, doesn't mean that that is not a terminal pairing. Just because a bull and a cow are the same color doesn't mean that that's not a terminal pairing. And that means those two together, he and her together, are not going to produce maternal females or bulls that will produce maternal females. So as we have chased carcass merits, as we've chased increased ribeye size, as we've chased bigger, faster, better genetics, I think that we have gotten away from the maternal performance and efficiency and effectiveness and all those things. And so just because two cattle are the same color doesn't make them a maternal pairing. Doesn't mean they're not terminal. So I think that we need to pay attention to that. We need to start to look at our choices and for breeding and say, what do I have here? What is this animal? What am I trying to accomplish here? Who am I breeding this animal for? Am I breeding it for the packer? If I'm breeding it for the packer, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, you know, workingcows.net/contact, but if I'm breeding it for the packer, I don't know if I can simultaneously breed it for maternal performance. I think that it's a one or the other kind of a thing. And so, you know, and I say that out of one side of my mouth, and the other side of my mouth, I say I think that those maternal females are the ones that produce animals that can produce tender, flavorful beef on grass. And so, you know, there's probably a balance there, but I think that it just is maybe a helpful perspective to look at these black-hided cattle. If, you know, the majority of the United States, I would guess, black-hided cattle, look at them and say, just because they're the same color doesn't mean they're maternal. We got to figure out who's our target business partner, who's our end consumer, and make sure that we are making decisions in every area. Systems thinking, right? We're making decisions in every area of our business to match that. And that includes keeping replacements or buying replacements. All those things are going to be affected by this one decision. And that's kind of the idea behind holistic resource management. It's the idea behind what Stan Parsons and Alan Savory came here to say, is that it's all connected. You can't change one thing without affecting many other things. And so we need to just recognize that and pay attention to it and make decisions accordingly. So, like I said, that's a first one. That's a tame one of these red pills for answers. Red pill number one: just because cattle are the same color doesn't mean they aren't terminal. Red pill number two: hobby farmer fits most ranchers. Some are just willing to admit it. And I'll raise my hand. Hobby farmer fits me, right? The piece of land I've got here in Western South Dakota will run 9 cow-calf pairs for a year. Obviously not enough to support a family. Not a family of 6 like I have. And so I'm going to have to supplement that income. And this comes down to a statement Wally Olson made one time, and I think it was on the podcast, for sure in his school he talks about this. Wally says, you know, with this business model, sometimes the accusation against me is, well, you're just an old cow trader. And he said, everybody's a cow trader. Nobody has all the cows they started with, you know, unless you've been in this business for 5 days. If you've been in this business longer than 5 days, you don't have every cow you started with, probably, right? So Wally says, everybody's a cow trader. I'm just a good one. And I'm, you know, that's kind of that. And Wally doesn't have a chip in his shoulder, but that's kind of that. I need to say this in a way that's going to connect more than just a rub you on the back. Maybe there needs to be a left hook here to the jaw to get you to hear what I'm saying. And I think that same thing goes for hobby farming. Everybody's a hobby farmer, or not everybody, but many people, many more than would like to admit it probably, are hobby farmers because they lack the scale that it takes to ranch as a full-time income for the entire family or more than one family. And so if you're a hobby farmer, admit it. It's okay. There's no shame in it. This is an incredibly capitally intensive business to get started in. And it might take 2 or 3 generations to be established enough that everybody on the ranch gets to draw a full-time income from the ranch. It might take more generations than that to do that. So I would say hobby farmer describes the majority of ranchers in America, but very few are willing to admit it. And I think that there is incredible opportunity if we are willing to admit it. Let's just talk about it in just simple terms of number of hours allocated to a given enterprise and say, okay, how much of a full-time salary can this ranch pay? How much of a full-time salary can these cows carry? Is it what percentage? And then organize your life so that they only take that percentage of your time, and the rest of your time, the rest of the time that you should be, that you should spend providing for and protecting your family, is coming from off the ranch, so that you're not giving them more time as far as your income generating time than is necessary. Now, if you want to make it a true hobby and do it in your spare time, the time outside of what you should be using to provide for and protect your family, by all means, go for it. Do it. That's fun. That's great. Have at it. But I just think it's a red pill. It's one of those things. You hear it, you see it, you can't unsee it, you can't unhear it. It changes the way you look at things. It changes the way you make decisions. So back to this, the hobby farmer describes most ranchers, but few are willing to admit it. And when you do admit it, then you can move on from being, in this position of letting the cows take all your time to more of an entrepreneurial mindset. And that is, I have multiple income streams. You know, in my case, I've got the grass here. That's an income stream at the place that my wife and I and our family steward and own. The place that my wife and I are renting from our next generation. Then I've got an income stream at Prairie Home Church. That's the full-time income stream. And then I've got an income stream from the podcast. And, you know, we could probably add a couple of more if I thought about it a little longer, but it becomes an entrepreneurial mindset where you're looking at different income streams and you're saying, what percentage of my time needs to be devoted to X income stream? What percentage of my time needs to be devoted to Y income stream? What percentage of my time needs to be devoted to Z income stream? And then which one's bringing in the most money? I devote the most time to that. Which one's bringing in the second most money? I devote the second most time to that. Which one's bringing in the third most money? I devote the third most time to that. And again, back to that thing. I'm not telling you how to ranch. I'm just trying to help us all think differently about these things, and maybe even open up some opportunities for people to go out and approach it a little differently and not be so rushed and stressed and hurried when it does come time to work the cows and everybody gets to enjoy it. So, everybody or many are hobby farmers. Some are just willing to admit it. And so we shouldn't be ashamed of that. Jason Meadows and Tyler Keckley have been doing some episodes on the Ag State of Mind podcast about ranching as a side hustle. This is, and Aaron Berger and I did an episode a while back about ranching as a side hustle. I think we need to own it. The hobby farmer describes many ranches in America. Some are just good at it. They're willing to admit that this is a hobby or this is not a full-time job. I am going to run it as a business, and I'm gonna do it. I'm gonna put into it as much time as it warrants me putting into it. And so, I think that could be a really helpful way of thinking, a really helpful opportunity to maybe think a little bit differently about how we are allocating our time and how we are thinking about the strategy that goes into managing our resources, the resources that have been entrusted to us. Here's another one. I'll go on to some of the ones that I'm more confident in, and then I'll finish up with one that I think is a little bit more of one where I'm out on the skinny end of the branch, a little more out on a limb. So if I don't infiltrate 60% of the rain I get, I live in a desert. Red pill number three. If I don't infiltrate 60% of the rain I get, I live in a desert. So what do I mean by that? I live in a 15-inch rainfall zone. If I don't infiltrate 60% of that 15 inches or more, I'm below the 10-inch or the 9-inch precip zone, which means I live in a desert. So if I am not infiltrating 60% of the raindrops that fall on my land, I need to manage as though I were living in a desert. I need to make decisions like someone who ranches in a desert, because this land isn't healthy enough to allow that rain to infiltrate, so it's running off to my neighbor's place. And so I need to make sure that I'm making decisions here and now like somebody who lives in a desert. And then in the future, when I'm capturing all the rain that falls here, when I'm keeping all the rain that falls here, then maybe I can start to manage like somebody who lives in a 15, 16-inch precip zone. But for now, I need to make some decisions differently. I need to start working towards putting down more litter, start working towards putting down more cover on the soil so that we can slow those raindrops down, infiltrate them, keep them from running off, and yeah, and approach it that way so that it's not, so that I'm not missing out. and then I can start making decisions differently, as I said. And that kind of goes back to that hobby farmer piece. Like, you know, maybe in my context, year-round herd doesn't make sense because, first of all, I lack some scale as far as acres are concerned. But secondly, we get the majority of our moisture at one time. And we need to stockpile it. Well, my place has been hayed for so long that it's predominantly crested wheatgrass, which isn't a real great stockpiled forage. And it's kind of, as many people have said to me over the years, use it or lose it. And so there's another one of those things. Context informs your business decisions. Context informs your business model. And we look at this as a business. And we're willing to say, this is one income stream among many. I'm an entrepreneur first, a rancher second. Or, you know, there's lots of things that come before those two. But I'm an entrepreneur before I'm a rancher. And I know I've got these other income streams that need my time, my care, my attention. And I need to make sure that I'm giving them the time and attention they deserve, even though I enjoy putting in step-in posts and rolling up polywire as much as anybody. It's in fact therapeutic for me. So it's something to think about, here are a couple of things that came to my attention this year. We were in desperate need of rain in and snow coming into this year, and this winter was a repeat of last winter. Very open, very little snow. No heavy wet snow to speak of in March when the ground is still frozen here, where it might get warm one day and run off and fill a dam. We kind of count on that to fill dams in this neighborhood. At the end of March, of course, you might have seen it. We had a pray for rain event, and we were just to that point where we're going to have, you know, some major turnaround here. Or as I've maybe shared here on the podcast, I had two different guys who were, I think both of them second generation guys, but they're well established in their 60s. Two different guys told me, you know, almost back to back days, surely back to back weeks, that if they hadn't gotten rain when we did, they would have been done ranching. And I don't know what all that means, if that was hyperbole or what, but you know, it was bleak here at the end of March. And then we got a major spring snowstorm at the end of April, kind of helped us start turning the corner. And then had a really good May and June as far as rain is concerned. And we grew, as you know, average to above average forage this year. And that's just kind of the way this country is. By July, a lot of times, you know, your moisture is shut off. You're not getting any more. And so it's just the we're kind of used to that. But one thing while we were watching that, and I think while that maybe that April storm was coming in, the meteorologist didn't, I mean, he knew what he was saying, but he didn't know what he was saying when he was speaking to an agricultural audience, I'm sure. He said that March is the, well, we'll just say it this way. March and April are the windiest and snowiest months. I think March is the snowiest month and the second windiest, and April is the second snowiest and the windiest. So March and April are the snowiest and windiest months, respectively. So that means that a lot of people's business models is set up to calve in quote unquote spring, but March and April are the windiest and snowiest months in South Dakota. And so I would call that winter calving if you're calving. And it, and again, if you got the barn space and the hay pile to do it, by all means, more power to you. Go for it. You know, enjoy it. But May calving isn't just about what we save in people or comfort for animals. I mean, it is that. It is an animal husbandry issue. It's a people management issue. May calving is also about the money that we save in supplementing animals that are calving in March, April, May, January, February, whatever. Basically, that dial that matches the forage supply with the forage demand, and the forage demand is in its peak in late gestation through early lactation. That's when the forage demand of the cow is at its highest. And so we want to match our forage production cycle to our forage demand cycle, and so that we don't have to supplement as much. Not that we don't have to supplement at all, but so that we don't have to supplement as much. So yeah, I think those are the red pills I had. Red pill number one was, just because cattle are the same color doesn't mean they aren't terminal. Red pill number two is, hobby farmer fits most ranchers. Some are just willing to admit it. Red pill number three, if I don't infiltrate 60% of the rain I get, I live in a desert. Red pill number four, and at least in South Dakota, and you could probably figure this out in your own zip code, March and April calving are the windiest and snowiest, or March and April are the windiest and snowiest months. And here's one more, last one. And this is something I'm thinking about, and if you want to help me think more clearly about it, again, workingcows.net/contact. But Big Food sees you as a cost to be reduced, not a partner or an ally. Don't play their game. Sell sunshine. Sell premium meat. Sell locally. Sell sunshine. What do I mean by that? Capture sunshine with grass. Get a healthy solar panel out there on the land and sell that sunshine to somebody, whether it's your own cows or somebody else's cows, whoever will pay you the most. Sell your sunshine to them, and then that's how we structure our business. Sell premium meat. Sell premium, well-marbled, grass-fed meat to, some kind of a cooperative program if you want to do it at scale, or if you don't want to be a salesman, maybe you're sick of hearing me say this, but Steve Strassheim red-pilled me one day. He said, if you don't love the the selling more than the farming, this isn't the business model for you, you know? And so, yeah, grass-finished meat and direct marketed meat is highly profitable for some and very attractive for many. But if you don't love selling more than you love planning a grazing plan, more than you love putting out step-in posts and rolling out polywire, then maybe it's not the business model for you, but there's probably still a way to do it, like through a cooperative program of some kind where somebody else is taking a cut for the marketing side of that. But I don't think that big food is looking out for us. As a matter of fact, there's a lot of indication that big food is looking to vertically integrate. I mean, they vertically integrated other sectors. I would say that they would love to vertically integrate beef. And there are maybe not vertically integrating by pushing out the little guy, but there are some out there who are developing their own supply chain, you know, and I don't know how that happens without pushing out the little guy. So maybe they're doing that, but there are some out there who are developing their own supply chain and trying to figure out a way to control that meat product, the beef, control the cow and the calf and the bull from conception through harvest. So I just don't think that we should think that they've got our best interests in mind. I think that we should look out for our own best interest, and we should ranch in a way that is most profitable in all of the areas, mentally, emotionally, physically, spiritually, financially, relationally, that is relationships with your spouse, relationship with your children, relationship with your neighborhood. To me, that's holistic, mentally, emotionally, spiritually, physically, financially, relationally. You know, I think that's a pretty good summary of the Old Testament idea of shalom or peace. You know, it's holistic. It touches every area of life. And so I think that we should seek to find a business model that is most profitable in all of those areas, as Derek Schwanebeck would describe it, true profit. And I think we should pursue that business model and not play their game. They're not looking out for you. You don't have to look out for them. You could go to selling just your sunshine that you've captured in a healthy solar panel to other people's cows, or you could direct market premium meat that you have worked hard on the genetics to get it to produce. And so there's lots of different ways to skin that cat. You can sell locally if you want to be the salesman, but there's lots of different ways. So those are some of the red pills I had. Red pill number four being big food doesn't see you. Big food sees you as a cost to be reduced, not a partner or an ally, and so don't play their game. So those are some of the red pills I had, some of the things that have been affecting the way I think. Would love your feedback. Would appreciate what you have to say to me. Play the outro music here, and then I'm going to drop in one of the late submissions to the Advice for the Next Generation. So stick around for that. Came in from Wayne Knight. Really appreciated what he had to share there, and it's a little longer than the rest, but given Wayne an opportunity to share 7 minutes of advice with the next generation is always something I'm up for. Really been enjoying some of the interviews I've had lately. Got one scheduled tomorrow with Doug Ferguson. Going to talk to him about his marketing schools. He's got one coming up here in Deadwood, South Dakota, kind of a destination location. Really fun place to come and hang out. Deadwood, South Dakota, September 25th through the 27th, September 25th through the 27th, and we'll have a ranch tour as well coupled with that. So if that interests you, Be on the lookout for that episode with Doug coming your way real quick, and we'll announce that as well. But I wanted to get the word out about that as early as I could so people could start arranging travel and some of those things. So September 25th through the 27th, Deadwood, South Dakota, Doug Ferguson Marketing School. We'll be there, and we'll look forward to seeing you there if you're able to make it. Those fill up pretty quick, I think, so track down Doug and get registered as soon as you're able to make your arrangements to be there. Also got good episodes coming up with Jared Lumen and Mary Jo Ehrman. Lord willing, another one coming up. I'm really excited about this one, but I won't share too much more about that till we've actually got it recorded. So looking forward to some of these episodes we've got coming your way in the next month. So stick around, be on the lookout for those, and enjoy this piece of advice from Wayne Knight, Executive Director of Holistic Management International, after the music.
We invite you to visit workingcows.net to subscribe to the show via iTunes or Stitcher. You'll also find detailed show notes pages, resources from our guests, and the industry leaders who have influenced them. For more ideas on putting your cows to work for you in a more profitable way, tune in next week.
Hi, Clay and your listeners. My name's Wayne Knight. I'm Executive Director of Holistic Management International, or HMI. I think it's a great opportunity to share some pearls, thoughts, ideas that I've come across in my ranching career and in my education career as a certified educator with HMI. Where to start on advice for a young farmer? I think the obvious place looking at things from a holistic management perspective is define the business statement of purpose. Don't let the business work for you. Make sure that you understand why you're in the farming or ranching business. Goals, personal goals are essential, but there's so much confusion between how to set up a goal for a family and how to set up a goal for the business. And this blurring of where the business starts and ends and the family takes over, creating that boundary is pretty easily and well successfully done with a business statement of purpose. It keeps the clarity, it creates that very clear division. So the goal of the business obviously aligns with the goal of the family and or the individual involved in the family business. Clearing that up just so clarifies what needs to be done. Spending a good amount of time on that, begin with the end in mind, is such a powerful thing. Or as Simon Sinek puts it, you know, what's your golden circle? What is that thing that's really turning you on, where you see that you have this advantage, this place that's inspiring you? If that's what you focused on and that's why you're in business, that's what's driving your decisions, so much of the rest of the business falls into place. The next thing that's really huge for me is using weak link to guide investment decisions and choices. With varying rainfall, with varying animal numbers associated with the rainfall fluctuations, using weak link to determine where at any given point in time you should be investing your time, your money, your resource, really focuses how to spend money, what to spend time on, and really creates a very healthy investment trajectory. I can think of so many examples of how I got off track because I wasn't focusing on the weakest link at the time. I was, you know, influenced by a drought that had passed or by a wet season and a desire to keep animals, more animals than I wanted to, for fear. If I just kept my focus on this is where I am. I need to grow grass. I need to lump herds together, concentrate on growing more forage at given time. And then suddenly that all switches around and I need to focus on making sure that animal performance is first and foremost, and that the investments in fencing and water infrastructure and things are aligned with where the weak link is at a point in time, I would have made far better strides in my whole operation. So encouraging that thought process and that monitoring to ensure that you're investing and making decisions in line with the weak link. The beauty of holistic management for me is how to best unlock nature's ability to combine water, sunlight, and symbiosis to better the whole under management. That's where the profitability, that's where the magic lies. Interviewing holistic management practitioners, people who've done a lot with ranching for profit or whoever, their huge aha is that moment where they have, using their animal density and their recovery times to really boost overall production, numbers of animals, health of animals. That is just the beauty. That's this golden circle, I guess, for me. And focusing on that is so valuable. The next point I wanted to make was try not to change too many things at one time. So if you can, focus on weak link, make incremental changes. It's not about reaching the ultimate ranch or farming operation in a small amount of time. It's much more about making continual improvement that and in a risk-safe way, reducing the risk, lowering the risk to a manageable level, to your competence level. You're going to make wonderful progress if you do incremental improvement, first grazing or holistic goal or financial analyses. Whatever you choose to start with, get that under your belt before you start changing multiple things. I got into a situation where I felt just totally overwhelmed. All my boundaries were moving. There was no solid ground. I was changing too much, too fast. If I'd slowed down and been more focused on changing, getting mastery, and then moving on in increment, I think it would have been a lot less stressful in managing change and monitoring that change. The last point I wanted to make is around monitoring. Assuming you're on the right trajectory rather than knowing you're on the right trajectory is so important. We tend to assume that things are going fine, that what we're doing is the right thing to do. And of course, in different years, one year you'll do one thing and it'll work out perfectly. Next year you do exactly the same thing and it has a completely different outcome. So whether you're monitoring your finances, whether you're monitoring your quality of life, whether you're monitoring your ecosystem function, monitoring is just fundamental to making progress, correcting soon. It's incremental improvement, but with knowledge. So yeah, that's my 2 cents worth. Clay, thanks for the opportunity. Love to hear your feedback. Bye.